Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So, a week ago, James Forsyth revealed on Coffee House that the government was working on a £1.6 billion towns fund as a way to try and woo Labour MPs representing Leave seats to back Theresa May's deal. Today, we have news that that fund is finally being unveiled. James, how is it landing?
I think the problem with this is that, as with so often in the government and Brexit, it falls between two stools. On the one hand, some purists don't like it. This is kind of pork barrel politics. On the other hand, the amounts of money involved, £1.6 billion spread over 7 years, is not a big enough sum to really move the dial for a lot of MPs. You know, it's one thing to be bribed, in inverted commas. It's another thing to be bribed cheaply. This isn't a kind of game-changing amount of money that allows, you know, it doesn't allow a Labour MP to go back and say, well, this fund which accompanies Brexit is going to transform the prospects of my town because it is so large. I mean, that is the problem with it. I think it would have been, if you were going to do this, it would have been better to do it on a much bigger, much larger scale.
Yes, Fraser, quite quickly we've seen a negative reaction as soon as this was announced last night officially from Labour MPs, the very Labour MPs the government is trying to win it over. Gareth Snell, one of the Stoke MPs, has made the point that the money isn't nearly enough. Then we've also had Lisa Nandy suggest that she's actually insulted at the idea you would try and win her over by money. Do you think this is the best tactic for winning Labour votes?
It is staggeringly inept, as is so much of the way that Theresa May is handling Brexit. You'd think at the very least you'd sound out these MPs before committing this extra money. And paradoxically, it might make it harder for these MPs to vote for her deal, because now if they do, they'll be opening themselves to the accusations that they've been bought and sold for Theresa May's gold. But what bothers me more fundamentally about this is that the Prime Minister still doesn't seem to have worked out that this isn't about money. The people in these constituencies don't want more money. They want their Brexit papers signed. And overwhelmingly, people were told that if you vote for Brexit, you're going to be poorer, there's going to be a recession, you're going to be worse off. And it's not that they didn't believe these warnings, it's that they thought that was a price worth paying for something greater and grander than just more handouts from the government. So I really don't think that you can try to overcome people's concerns about Brexit not being delivered by a little bribe here and there. It certainly is the case that the recovery of the last few years has not affected many smaller towns in the way that it could have been. But government spending is not the remedy to that. You need to work out what's going wrong in these places and then apply it. If writing a cheque was a solution to all of these problems, why wouldn't everybody vote for Jeremy Corbyn?
Now, Theresa May needs to win Labour votes, and as we just heard, that's not going particularly well, and also Brexiteer votes if she is to have any chance of passing her deal by the 12th of March. So, looking to the Brexiteers, there have been lots of reports over the weekend that this could be the moment that Brexiteers start to rally around Theresa May's deal and they are softening their red lines. James, is this really the case?
So, I think the Brexiteers are softening their red lines, but the problem is their softening of their red lines still doesn't take you to what Geoffrey Cox is likely to come back from Brussels with on the backstop. So, you know, I think you can't ignore the fact that they have moved from saying that, you know, the entire backstop must be excised from the treaty to saying, well, we could live with this with a unilateral exit mechanism or a time limit. That is a softening. They're also saying that you don't have to actually reopen the withdrawal agreement to do this. As long as this was a legally equivalent change, they would accept that. But again, the problem is that this is not what the EU is about to turn around and offer Geoffrey Cox. You know, the idea of either a time limit or a unilateral exit mechanism is always at the top end of expectations. And frankly, you were only going to get that at 5 minutes to midnight. But because the Prime Minister said that the Commons will get a vote on extending Article 50, and everyone thinks that the Commons would vote to extend Article 50 rather than go for no deal, you know, you almost structurally can't get to 5 minutes to midnight now. That's one problem. And secondly, it is very important for the EU to show that, you know, that the interests of Ireland have been in place, you know, have remained paramount. So they don't want to do anything that would be a kind of accompanied by a headline in the Irish press of, you know, EU climbed down or Ireland abandoned. So I think that the area where you're looking at what Cox is going to get is not going to be enough. Now, even if Cox comes back without that much, I think there are some Tory MPs who will vote for the deal now. But the problem for Downing Street is the ones who are now suggesting they will vote for the deal almost regardless of what Cox comes back with are essentially the ones who it was surprising to see vote against the deal in the first place. So, and so often, Theresa May is making some progress, but nowhere near quick enough to actually get her over the line. And it's worth remembering, you know, she did lose the first vote by 230.
And when it comes to winning those Brexiteers round, members of the European Research Group of Tory Eurosceptics, there's definitely been some perhaps not encouraging signs for them today, as news has began to surface that Geoffrey Cox doesn't believe he can actually get a unilateral exit mechanism. And one article that is also doing the rounds among Brexiteers is a piece by Martin Howe QC, seen as a Brexit-friendly legal mind, who has written on Conservative Home about the fact that actually a 20-month Brexit delay would be better than voting for Theresa May's deal. The theory goes that this would give you time to prepare for no deal and you would be able to avoid being trapped in the backstop. Fraser, do you buy this argument?
Not for a second. I really don't see why another 21 months would change the fundamental problem, and that is the complete absence of leadership, the complete absence of anybody willing to make an argument for no deal. By what mechanisms would it take place? I mean, the Brexiteers have lost the argument that a no-deal Brexit would not be a complete calamity. I don't think it would be, but then again, I'm not a politician. And I think what we've seen in Parliament is that all of these... Sure, I mean, as James says, there was supposed to be a midnight. There was supposed to be there for a 5 minutes to midnight, and the midnight was no deal. But if this Parliament is going to vote it down, as it seems it is, then the alternative is between Theresa May's deal with whatever Geoffrey Cox comes back with, or between Brexit sliding ever into the distance. To delay it for another 2 years would be, I think, an admission of incredible ineptitude and failure on the government's part. And I can't see the no-deal argument being won by the same bunch of politicians who failed to make the argument last time around. And I think, actually, the more that Tories think about this, they work out that Theresa May's deal, for its many, many faults, and we've listed 50 of them on the website, might turn out to be better than any of the realistic alternatives. And right now, that alternative looks like no Brexit, or it looks like a 2-year delay, which would probably lead to no Brexit. This is what it's like when political leadership fails.
I think people talk about why Brexiteers should be worried about the extension, right? It's not the extension that should necessarily
worry duration.
Them. But it's what would accompany the extension. If there is an extension with no agreed deal between the UK and the EU, so in other words, not just a technical extension to allow the legislation through Parliament, you would see a renewed attempt from that Oliver Letwin crew for Parliament to take control of the process. And I think in that scenario, it would very likely succeed. And when Parliament would then take control of the process, it would then tell the government to go and negotiate at least membership of the customs, permanent membership of the customs union, and at worst, a full Norway plus relationship where the UK becomes something very close to a permanent non-voting member of the EU in the single market, in the customs union, but unrepresented on either question. The danger is not just that there would be an extension, that there would be a 21-month delay, but what Parliament would do within that time frame.
This is why I think that her deal passing with the Cox fig leaf, whatever it is now the least unlikely option. Because the alternatives, when you just think about them from any Brexiteer perspective, they all look worse.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And when it comes to unhappy Brexiteers, perhaps one of the most unhappy with the current situation is George Eustace, who quit government last week to speak from the backbenches on the matter. You can hear what he has to say if you subscribe to the magazine, 12 issues for £12, as you will be given a free ticket to our Who is Afraid of No Deal Brexit event at the Emmanuel Centre on the 11th of March, where Eustace will join Fraser Nelson, James Forsyth, Dominic Grieve, Suella Braverman and Nicky Morgan for the debate. Just go to www.spectator.co.uk/no-deal-offer.